Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
どこにいるのかな。見えない。
あ、こんなところ。
What's good, internet? It is Monday, October 8th, and you are listening to Waypoint Radio, episode 193. I'm your host, Austin Walker, and joining me today, Danielle Riando.
Hi, happy Monday.
Yeah, I'm feeling it. I'm feeling it like a big time. Natalie Watson.
Hi. Shout out to my brother who it's birthday today.
Damn.
Happy birthday. Wow, you're close.
Close Me birthdays. And my two brothers were all 4 days apart.
Wow.
I'm 4 days apart of my order. Sister.
That seems physiologically difficult.
I'm the fourth. There's my next brother's the eighth, and the next one's the 12th.
Wow.
My dad, my sister, and I are exactly that. My That's sister really cool. is the 9th. I'm the 13th. My dad's the 17th of February.
My aunt, my grandmother, and my sister were all born on August 6th.
Whoa!
I was born on the 8th.
Whoa!
Wow.
Damn. True Leos.
Damn, we've got some powerful families in here.
I don't have
Damn.
Any of that shit at all. I'm Austin Walker. I already said that part. Rob Zachney. That was the voice of Rob Zachney. That's who else is on this call.
Happy Columbus Day, everybody.
Fuck off.
When I was in the third grade, uh-huh. I was cast as Christopher Columbus.
You have the voice.
Elementary school, like... production yeah. of I don't know what it was a production of, but it was like the myth of Columbus.
I think it was a production of being the ideology necessary to exist in America without questioning anything. That's yep. what was being produced.
I must say I was fabulous. My Columbus was dressed in the finest in purple silks.
You know,
okay. it was a bit it looked very fancy, very, very Ren Faire.
Yeah.
But I was accused by my third grade teacher, who hated me and always tried to keep me down,
despite
of hamming it up.
You as Christopher Columbus?
Hamming it up!
She apparently did not like my performance.
Wow.
She felt I was overplaying the part. I felt like, what sort of person is going to like tell his crew when the crew's like, this sucks, let's go home, why are we even doing this? That I feel there's land out there in my bones. Who's going to, like, what sort of person is going to say that? You have to commit to that fully to embody the monster. But yeah. apparently I should have been a little more subtle.
See, you knew he was a monster. That's right. The thing. You were so much more advanced than your third grade teacher. You knew you had to make that performance hammy so that you could actually show the monstrosity of Columbus. And she was just way, yeah, third she should grade. Have been in third grade.
That might be me right? rearward projecting, though.
Third
on that.
Grade, like, Rob Zachney came in and was just like, listen, just because people back in the day thought it was okay, that's not the whole story. Actually, if you look into it, even back then, he was tried for being a monstrous governor who hurt his people. Even then, even in the context of his time, everyone knew he was a shithead.
Actually, in that play, the theme is everyone, it's basically like a drill tweet. Like, everyone keeps being like, shut the fuck up. And, like, Columbus in that play is like,
what
just keeps making
this?
My opinions worse.
Great.
Wow.
Being a colonist to own the libs. It's great. God. Happy...
Indigenous Peoples Day.
Yeah, that's actually what I'd like to wish you all. How's everybody doing on this Monday morning after I just got to say, last week my Monday was jury duty. My Saturday was a root canal. I really, truly have lived the life of an adult. And then last night was not sleeping because of the impending...
Said.
No. I didn't sleep all week because of the bad tooth. The tooth kept me up all week. The thing that... The root canal is actually great. Like, there's no more, there's nothing in there anymore. There's no nerve. And so it's just other nerves nearby.
Oh my God,
nearby.
I can see, like, the back of your head.
You're stronger
now. Yeah, it's
now.
All the way through. Yeah. You just see, root, all the way through. It's going to make my entire, I decided, you know what, just let some of the brain gas out. You know what I mean? You get a little gas in there.
You've
it's
got
like, whoa.
So much brain gas.
I had to get it all out. Because
you galaxy all day long.
I'm always galaxy braining, and I get all the nebulas and whatnot in there. And through my ears and my mouth and my nose, which all go to your brain directly in your eyes. Through the, you know, my occipital lobe. And then I got to get it all out. And I thought, like, hey, when you're in there with those drills, just bzz, give me a little brain gas discharge, you know? So that helped. But then, then just like last night was also just the worst because of the
speaking of gas discharges.
Yeah, it turns out the world is literally on fire because of centuries of terrible industrialism and deregulation and unchecked capitalist expanse. Anyway, didn't sleep for that reason. That's cool. How's everybody else doing this fine Monday morning?
Well, I mean, I didn't sleep either.
Oh, good. So we're on the same page.
Yeah, it was kind of a weird night. It was a weird thing to sit with all night. It's like a thing you knew on some level, but like now it's like when you know something's profoundly wrong, but you're really still like dreading getting the diagnosis, but you also like need that diagnosis.
This is also my tooth issue, right? Because I spent years without the money to get dental work done and without dental coverage. And then I got dental coverage and I didn't have the money still in a previous job. And then I had dental coverage and like a decent salary but did not have the time because I was launching a website. And it was very easy to prioritize other things than self-care. And then this year was really the first time, beginning of this year, I should have gotten all my dental shit taken care of. And I didn't. I continued to deprioritize and prioritize other stuff. And I shouldn't have. And that's my fuck up.
But
then it blew up in my face.
You made a change.
I made a change. Well, it made a change first. And it was like, Austin, you're going to be in so much pain. You can't do shit. You better just go there and beg them to put a drill in your mouth. Like, I know you hate that. I know you're afraid. I know you're terrified. By the time I got to that dentist, I was straight up, like, excited. I looked at pictures online and shit that I couldn't even imagine the week
marathon,
before without
man.
Being. Yeah,
bro.
Absolutely. Jesus. It was like, fuck me up, doc. What do you want, dental implants? What do you want? Just do whatever you want in here. This is all you. Here's my checkbook. You fill it out. Like, I was ready to go. I'm feeling better now. I'm on some painkillers. I'm on some antibiotics. I'm about to get into a plane. I'm worried that it's going to be like that. You know, has this ever happened to you where you have a toothache and then there's like a plane pressure situation? We'll see. Maybe it'll be fine. I have like a little hop. I have like a hop to Minneapolis and then from Minneapolis to Vancouver this week. And so maybe that first hop, the thing that I'm scared of is like it's going to hurt a lot in that first hop, and then I'm going to have to get back on a plane and be like, all right.
And be thinking about it.
Here we go. 3 hours from now, I'm going to get back on this plane.
Can you call the dentist to be like, look, bro, here's what I'm about to do. I'm about to get on a plane.
Yeah. Hook me up.
I don't know if it's a bro. It might be a sis.
It was a
bro. I don't know.
Well, the phone, the nurses and the there's a word for like dental
technicians.
Thank you. We're
got you.
Yeah. Thank you very much. I had a good time. It was totally fine dentist like visit. All said. I haven't. You know, it's no complaints. Anyway, video games.
Anyway,
I guess
video games happen.
Opposite of dental. Then, well, I don't know. You're sitting in a chair. There's lots of repetitive motions. You kind of just like time of some amount passes.
There's vibrations.
There are vibrations.
Either way,
yeah,
right?
That's true. Y'all been playing in video games? Rob, I got a message from you the other day on our Waypoint Discord where you were just, there's almost a fever dream like quality to this series of messages. You said, this game is sublime. Like, I'm playing it and I think it might be art, but with none of the clarity of intent or meaning that I associate with it. And yet I feel like I'm playing a really tremendous impressionist landscape. And you were, of course, talking about Forza Horizon 4, a game that it seems like you fell in love with.
Yeah, and you know what? I stand by that shit, actually. like, it was a fever dream, but it's like I've woken up in the den the next morning, and like the impressionist landscape still burns within my imagination. And I'm like, no, I no longer need the pipe. I have my vision. Forza Horizon 4, first of all, I was so taken by surprise by that game. Like, that game has one of the giddiest openings.
It's wild.
I've ever seen in a video game. Like,
do you want to explain it?
Yeah, it's both like and unlike other Forza Horizon openings. They've all been very aspirational. They've all been very, like, Come away to horizon. Let me share with you my vision. Escape to the beautiful land of the car festival where there's
Coachella.
Nothing but
car challop.
Damn it. But so there's nothing but like open road and beautiful cars. This kind of does that, and it also introduces the new idea that like, let me show you what I see, a festival that never ends, that's year-round, that's all the seasons. And it begins taking you through like a beautiful series of like edits, like a series of screen wipes. And it opens on like driving a sports car on like a high summer day. And you're just like racing along and it's incredibly fast. Like this game, like from the first thing it dazzles you with is a sense of speed that I have not encountered very often in racing games. Like maybe you'd have to go out to Burnout Games, I think, to really get like the almost exhilarating and slightly scary amount of speed you're carrying. Like it's that beautiful, the landscape dissolves into like everything's slightly soft and smeared in colors and shapes. And then it cuts to autumn and like right before your eyes, the entire like landscape changes. And it's like this idyllic Scottish autumn. You know, again, glorious colors, rainy roads. You're in a different car. I think at that point you're chasing motorbikes that are like releasing
just like color contrails. Yeah, it's so good.
Yeah, and so it's just this entire surreal sequence taking you through these seasons, and also showcasing Forza games. Like they look good; they're gorgeous games. This is a game that from the first is telling you it's a little more about landscape than the car. Like it's the thing that is really impressive here is the cars look great, but the feeling of like weather and place and atmosphere is far more palpable than I've ever seen in a Forza game, certainly.
I think that explains a lot why I enjoy this game. I hadn't put it into those terms. That really helps me because I was on the Beastcast last week and I was talking about how much I like the game and I was struggling to figure out why this one was resonating with me more than past Forza Horizon games. And in that language, the thing that I realize is when I think about Forza Horizon 3, where it took place in Australia, Australia existed and it was very beautiful in that game, but it was mostly this sort of like 1 hour photo backdrop for your super beautiful cars. It was not that it was nondescript, but it was very much it could have been traded out for anything else. Whereas here it really feels like the British countryside in different weather conditions is such a big part of the draw that it draws my attention, even though I'm not someone who necessarily cares a great deal about car detailing and all the stuff that I think draws a lot of kind of car aficionados to the series.
And yet those cars are well realized. That's the other this is the thing that's tricky. Fair. Like imagine like this is it's cruel to make this comparison, but I couldn't get it out of my mind. The crew games and this.
Oh yeah, I know.
Like
I know.
The like for some reason the crew is trying to be this game. The crew badly wants to be Forza Horizon, particularly Forza Horizon 4. It's trying to be about place and atmosphere and like sense of locale. But everything just seems like false and fake and empty. And the thing that really dooms it, though, is the cars feel utterly lifeless. They're interchangeable. There's no character or personality to any of them. Here, there's a weird, like, these cars still feel like they have identities. It still feels like you can totally bring the wrong car to a race.
Oh, and I have. Like, trust me.
Yeah. Like, I brought a 2016 like Mustang GT to a rally race through like deep mud. Mustang is not really, that is a highway car at best, and it's not meant for this, but you can
do it.
It
goes straight. You can go straight for a long time in a Mustang.
Yeah, totally. It goes very fast. Really like well. That's like if you want to turn
less so.
Maybe, like
a little
lift,
bit
lift and coast
on the highway. Yeah, exactly. But
But trying to get it through this off-road race was just a comedy of errors. Like the minute like the road banked at all, this thing would wallow around in the mud every time it like hit a deep puddle. And this is a cool thing. You can like I've never seen a game that captures this so well. You know how when you, like, you're driving and you hit a deep puddle, the car is almost, like, yanked to the side? Like, you can feel, yeah, like, that puddle, oh, yeah, and the curve of the slope,
like,
of the road.
Like, slight fishtailing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's almost like somebody, like, just hooked you and is, like, pulling, mm-hmm, you to the side of the road. That happens so vividly in this game. The sound, the sudden, like, jerk on the steering wheel. It's weird. You feel it even through a controller. But I was trying to get this fucking Mustang around this track, and I was completely getting blown to pieces by these, like, rally-tuned cars. And playing on the background is a really good rendition of Holst's Jupiter.
Because there's, like, a classical, there's a bunch of different radio stations, station. One of them has a bunch of classical
and
music.
They, like, yeah, they, like, have some good renditions of these classical pieces. And, I don't know, just, like, it is such a beautiful game, and the music sounded so good, and even screwing up so badly in that car, just being in the completely wrong vehicle for that scenario, I still had this big, like, asinine grin on my face as I just completely, like, ate shit in this race. Mm-hmm. Didn't matter. And, like, I still feel that way.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I definitely, so I had the opposite thing happen, which is, not the opposite thing, but the inverse, I'd say, is that I had, I kind of, there was a point at which I was like, I could just make this Subaru WRX just work for everything. Like, it's great for rally racing, but I can do everything with it. And the thing that I learned was, like, oh, it's such an easy car to control. It takes the corners so nicely. Like, I'm always able to gain whenever there's lots of tight turning. But once I was in a race where it was more about pick up and go, or where things moved from rally to complete off-road, I didn't have the power to keep up. And that was really exciting, because it was like, all right, I guess I have to take off the training wheels and first figure out what do I need to do to win in a race like this, and then second, figure out what do I want to, which cars just appeal to me based on how they look. Just fundamentally, what do I want to do? And, you know, I think one of the first touchstones with driving games people do go to is, like, what are cars I've had? And I haven't had a car in a while. And my favorite cars are all cars that are not ever in these games, like a 1991 Honda Prelude or an 87 Supra, which are, like, cars I've had or that my family has had that I thought were cool at the time. But I realized, like, oh, what I really want is just show me all the 80s and 90s cars, and the game can do that. And, like, okay, cool. Like, how can I find a car that can be great for street racing that has this body design? And then if I want to upgrade it, I can either go in and, like, do all the manual upgrading, or there's straight up just a button that's like, hey, quick upgrade this to, like, A class or S class or whatever you need it to be. And, like, I don't have to worry about that. And it's let me kind of find the way I want to dive in and go from here is my everything car to, like, here is my little tiny fleet of, like, 6 or 7 cars, all of which I think are cool. Maybe I've given them all paint jobs, or I've downloaded fun, you know, livery from the online service or whatever, and be like, here it is. This is my bullshit anime trash car for street races. Here is my, like, God, I have a bunch of complete bullshit. It's very fun. We'll have to stream it at some point, because there's a lot to love in that game.
I really want to play.
Should.
I love the Forza games. I love pretty much Forza and Forza Horizon. I guess Forza
in general,
regular, yeah, and Forza Horizon, Forza General.
Does Forza General have
Forza Motorsport?
Motorsport. Yeah. Motorsport is the Motorsport, yeah, is the subtitle. Yeah.
I sort of secretly love racing games, even though I know Rob goes in harder with them.
Rob is on a racing podcast that I don't think we've never talked about here. But you're on Shift F1, right?
Well, yeah, but that's very recent. We wouldn't have talked about it.
What's not like this week just recent, is it?
No, it's this season recent.
Okay, well,
yeah, I totally all about Eve to Danny O'Dwyer.
good.
Wow.
Good. No,
I didn't.
But really, folks, I love cars.
Yeah. No, but it's the funny thing is, I am surprised at the degree to which this is both, like, it's still satisfying as a game about cars,
right,
but also it's so rare to come across a game that is like the things you like about driving, like when, like, a good drive. They're rare because, like, traffic sucks, and it's, like, really rare that you're going to get out on open road, yeah, and just have that, like, really meditative sort of drive where you have the freedom to just look around and take in the sights. And Forza Horizon 4 just, like, generates moment after moment like that, even when you're in the middle of some of the most absurdly contrived racing scenarios imaginable. Like early on, they're like, you know what you need to do is race the behemoth. And it's like, what's the behemoth?
I love this.
And you get a little pre-race, like between each race, there's a little cutscene. Usually it's just a loading screen with your driver, like hanging out by his car, doing idle animations. In this one, your driver's hanging out next to like a Toyota off-road truck. And then they back up one of those giant, like, hovercraft.
It's huge. And, like, we say giant, and what you're thinking of is, like, a big truck. It's not. It's like a big boat.
It's like a ferry.
It's like
one of those high-speed ferries.
But on the land.
Like, yeah.
It's the first time I've considered what size those things are. Like, I've known that they've existed for my whole life. I'm like, oh, yeah, hovercraft or whatever. Which recently I also, in conversation, described as a hovermobile, and apparently it's not called a hovermobile. But I think maybe it should be called a hovermobile.
I think they'd have caught on more by now if they were called hovermobiles. But yeah, they're like, we're going to make you race one down a mountainside. Let's see how you do. And it's ridiculous, but it's also kind of amazing because it's like racing a land ship.
Yeah.
It's weird. It is a weird and disturbing thing to be racing against, but it is awesome.
Yeah, I think that those yeah, I linked it in the chat here.
Hover transfer.
It's really fucking cool.
These are wild.
And there's a bunch of these. There's like a bunch of these types of races against ridiculous vehicles. There's a train race. There's a plane race. There's a bunch of the, like, all right, you're going to race something that, like, doesn't make sense for a car to race. And so much of it is communicated through the physics and through, like, the scale. I think it's really funny that I think when I think about us, we don't talk about games like this that often. We don't talk about driving games like this or sports games like this. And when I say us, I mean both this podcast, but also kind of like the larger critical sphere. We spend a lot of time talking about immersive sims and RPGs and adventure games and things that have narrative and things that have lore and quote unquote world building. Not that this doesn't have world building, right? We already talked about the ways in which the climate and the kind of world design help create a certain atmosphere and feeling that's world building. But I think it's a shame because it dulls our ability to talk about things in this kind of formal and aesthetic sense, where it's so easy for me as a critic to hammer in on, like, here are how the characters are written. Here are how this boss fight, you know, communicates something about this faction. And it's so important to also think about the words that Rob was saying earlier about, like, the way in which the location can communicate a feeling of speed, right? Or something like that, right? Like, those sorts of things are part of our critical toolbox that often become dull because we don't push ourselves to use them. And playing a game like this is the sort of thing that reminds me that it's worth digging into that stuff. Because when I think about that hovercraft with all of its weight and speed and, like, the it communicates something about technology and about the heft of the things we can build in a way that playing other games just doesn't. Like, that fucking hovercraft is terrifying. Seeing the train go, and there's a train race that is, like, so fast and it's so direct and it's so frustrating because it doesn't have to deal with turns because it has tracks and I have to deal with turns, goddammit. How am I supposed to beat this thing? Communicate something about, not just about trains, but about different types of technology. It, you know, it's not, I don't think there's a thesis statement at the bottom of it, right? But it's important to think about games that fall out of those more traditional genres that draw our critical attention, because it just, like I said, I think it keeps us sharp.
Mm-hmm.
It does remind me of a piece that we had when Forza Horizon 3 came
yes.
out. We actually had a really cool piece about Australia and sort of the political machinations going on inside of Australia, particularly with sort of conservative leanings. I'm failing to remember exactly what we called it.
It was Forza Horizon 3 depicts a better Australia than Australians deserve, which was written by an Australian, to be clear. It was written by James O'Connor. James was trying to work through the sort of, like, picture-perfect vision of Australia that had been whitewashed of a lot of its political baggage. This was right in the middle of a number of kind of immigration crises and detention center crises that are still ongoing, as far as I know. And the sort of, like, the history of Australia as or not the history, but one of the ways that Australia presented both to its own citizens, but also globally, as, like, the party zone as like the fun. It's fun. Right. We're all just
adventure fun time
here. And that felt like it was like a whitewashing of some of the issues, which, you know, Brexit, as far as I know, hasn't come up yet in Forza Horizon 4, though I wouldn't be surprised sure. if it did, because things like Reddit absolutely do. Like, name dropped? Like, not name dropped, but like, oh yeah, I read that Reddit thread, says a character in Forza Horizon 4. Mm. Or there's an entire series of races I've heard that I've not gotten to yet, but I heard Jeff Gerstmann talk about this the other day. There's an entire series of races that are based on everyone's favorite, like, video game of all time. So they'll just be like, oh yeah, this is the race in which we're trying to remake Outrun. And like, it's like a YouTuber, but apparently like a decent YouTuber. I'm very excited to see these races. I don't want to, you know... Don't want to just like repeat a Bombcast segment from last week, but that stuff sounds really cool. Sure. I'm excited to see it because one, I don't know what the list of those cars are. It's like a multi-race thing. And two, it's just interesting to see a game that's like, yeah, video games exist. Reddit exists. We don't have a fake Reddit. It's not called Set It. It's not called, you know, whatever else it could be. It's not like the CSI SVU version of the internet. It's just the internet. and I like that.
It's such a weird, like, the you know, the first thing, I don't know, there's weird likable touches in this game, though. Like, the first people you meet are organizers.
Right.
Like, literally, the first characters you meet, the people, like, the person you drive in turns out not to be your actual avatar in the game. It's the lead organizer who puts Horizon Festival together. And, like, on the radio messages, like, all the DJs are like, man, like, do you have any idea how fucking hard it is to get anything done? Do you have any idea? Like, there's this one guy who's talking about, like, you know, man, let me tell you, like, I'm in a band and half the managers that, like, try to, like, you know, set you up with a gig and, you and, like, leave you stranded in a motel with, like, no money and, like, no gig. It's amazing that they have people like this who can put this together. And it's this weird, like, from the first, the game is crediting the sorts of people that, like, other Horizon games have been like, this just sort of happens. Horizon Festival's awesome. It's this very, like, utopian... and I don't know, Forza Horizon 4 has this weird, like, oh yeah, there's, like, logistics behind this. There's, like, effort behind it.
Well, there has to be, because this is a 24/7 festival that's taken over Northern England, into Scotland, into Edinburgh, right? Like, there
the
is...
The environmental destruction this terrible. Thing would, like, wreak. It's, like... Like, in the first minutes, like, stone walls, they're like tissue paper. You just blow through them. You need to cut a racetrack, you'll go straight through a hedge, a stone wall. Like,
a number of trees.
Like, yeah, most trees.
What insurance company took this know. On? I don't know. I need that insurance.
This maybe might... this is the utopian Brexit vision.
No.
Like, this is the new economy.
I was going to say, maybe this is, like, an alternative Mad Max post- the global warming disaster. This game takes place actually in 2018 of the new calendar, 2,000 years from now, with a bunch of cars that they brought seasons back for Horizon Festival. This is the only place there are seasons left in the world. The rest of the world is just a pit. But here, as long as people race, the storms will brew. And then, you know, it's you know, the eternal race. Anyway... Now that we're done talking about cars, let's take a quick break, and then when we come back, we can talk more about video games, both in their most ambitious and their most, you know, I'm not going to diss Super Mario Party. Maybe it's good this time. I'm excited to hear about it. We'll be right back.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
All right, Natalie, tell me about Super Mario Party and why I should enjoy it.
You should enjoy it because it is a fun game, Austin, that is lighthearted and doesn't make you feel sad, but lets you have fun with your friends if you can actually round up your friends to play the game, which
is that like an insult for me? Is that, are you saying?
No, it's an insult for me because I played Super Mario Party alone.
Oh, no. You had a party of one.
Wow, it's like Super Mario Green.
I had a party of one. I got one friend to play some mini games with me the first night, and we were both so tired, and she's visiting in from Atlanta. Shout outs to Joel. And her. Yeah. But so I got her to play. We were so tired. I was like, I just want to try it. I don't want to play a full round. I don't want to like play the game, but I just want to play some Mario Party mini games. So we ended up playing like 10 of them. We're like just one. And then we ended up playing like 10 and then did this like mini game mode in which you, it is not just like first, second, third, and fourth. You don't win just by your placement. You win by like how well you do. So the games just keep going. Like the mini games keep going until you die. So you get first, but you get points. Just keep going until you die.
Mario Party till you die.
Okay. but it so instead of just placements, your placements have scores attached to them, and so your cumulative score is what you win by. So we played that mode, and then I played a bunch of mini games by myself because I didn't want to spoil the experience of I haven't actually played the party
what
yet.
Okay, so you've only because played mini games. That feels like so cheating. I only played, to me that feels like, well, only eating your dessert. That's what that feels like.
Some would agree. I wanted to play. My boyfriend has a friend in town as well, and I had this whole plan of we were gonna all get together. Mm-hmm. I cleaned up my apartment. I made it real nice.
Super Mario Party ready.
We're gonna play some Mario Party, and they were like, "We're tired," and so they didn't come. And so I was like, "Well, I don't want to spoil the party mode for me yet, but I'll play the mini games." And they were like, "That's cheating because now every time a mini game pops up, you're gonna be like, "Oh, I know this one." And I was like, "Well,
y'all should have come over then."
Y'all should have come over.
I'm not sure I'd like go cross borough for Mario Party, like. Just to be honest, like
especially with the L down on like, weekends.
Yeah, it's fair. What if there's like pizza though, or beer, or like
that? I need to know more about that. What if
there's your loving partner on the other side of that burrow waiting pizza? For you?
She got a good
you
pizza.
Know, I could have gotten pizza. I didn't say it, but if they were like we're hungry, I could have accommodated. Also, I supplied the game, so
yeah. But then also,
they
you were like
the pizza.
Practicing it. Who practices Mario Party? Like, what sort of
Rob?
Me, because
Rob.
I need to win.
Wait, I definitely
because
would do that.
I need to be the best.
I would
yeah, you would
ago,
too.
2 weeks ago, you told that story about War of the Ring, in which you beat Nick as Nyx.
That was educational. That was for his own.
How am I not being educational? How am I not
I
being?
That, yeah, Natalie has gone to the Zachney School. Mm-hmm. God, are the mini games neat? Are they like there are new ones?
They're fun.
Presumably,
there are new ones. Most of the ones I played were new ones. I just played random, like I just had them randomized, and so I think almost all of the ones I played were new ones because I didn't recognize any of them. A lot of them like use the Joy-Con. And okay, the best part about the game is after you win around, you take your Joy-Con and you go, yeah! And so you make a motion of like a thumbs up kind of from the outside to the inside, and it makes your you and your friends high five, and it is so
cute
and good. It's really good. And so every time you have to go, it won't proceed if you don't do it. So you gotta go, yeah! And it's really
so
cute.
To be in the Mario Party, you have to do the Mario Party salute.
Right. Uh-huh.
It's
yes.
Hidden curriculum, as my friend Troy Goodfellow would say.
I have two questions, Natalie.
Yes.
The first one, since Luigi's dead, is Luigi in this?
Luigi's there. I played as Monty Mole, which was very cute.
Monty Mole's good.
But yes, Luigi is there. This seems to have taken place before his untimely passing.
Okay.
According to the lore.
Okay.
I think this was filmed, his role in this game was filmed pre the Nintendo Direct in which he was sacrificed, really.
Yeah.
In memoriam. So
this is like a second Luigi, which is, of course, another theory that people have.
That would be the green man, the greener man.
No, but
greener
what if there's man. Still a third one? Like, you know about Luke, right? Luke Skywalker?
Luke Mario?
Yeah, Luke Skywalker. You don't know about Luke Skywalker?
I've heard the name.
No, Luke Skywalker, the clone, the genetic clone with two U's. You don't know?
So, okay, so the clone that Joris.
Uh-huh, yeah.
So Sparty clones would have, like, they were sort of fragmented identities of the original uh-huh. template, and so the telltale is they would mispronounce their own names. So Joris Kabouth.
Kabouth, yeah.
Joris Kabouth.
Uh-huh.
And right. that's how you knew that was the bad one. Although, yep. reading those books, I'm not sure there was ever a good one. But anyway, there's clone Luke.
Hot take.
There's also bigger Luke. Which we shouldn't forget bigger about. Luke? Bigger Luke. The Bigger Luke theory.
What?
Do you not familiar with the BL theory?
No.
Commonly abbreviated as BL, or more uncommonly, BGL, is the slightly larger manifestation of Luke Skywalker that is said to appear in certain scenes of the original Star Wars trilogy, contrasting to regular Luke. The appearance of Bigger Luke in a particular scene is generally, but not always, judged relative to the height of Han Solo, and as such, Han is the primary go-to frame of reference amongst Bigger Luke theorists. No, you don't, you're not? Okay.
I'm not familiar
this
with this.
This is news to me, and I thought I was up on this shit.
So I'm just trying to pay attention to see if Luigi or Bigger Luigi comes up, because I got
Greener Luigi.
Greener Luigi, yeah, yes. GreenerLuigi.com. Thank you. God.
That's what it is.
What was your second...
My yes. second question has to do with the fact that I have a long and storied history with this series.
Ooh.
I thought the yes. first one was great. I was also 15. I thought the second one was great. I was also 16.
The second one's still
played,
good.
Like 7 on the GameCube, and I was like, "Whoa, this series is taking a turn." Is
they
this
got
one
bad.
Actually kind of good?
Well, I haven't played the party mode yet, so I can't speak to that.
That's the big one. Yeah,
that's true.
That's true. Which really makes me this whole segment on the podcast. I mean, I don't know what I started here. I'm sorry for saying that
we're
I played
in
a game
it now.
That
it we're in it.
I know we're all the way in.
All you've done is written a check for the future by which you better have played this game.
You know, maybe I'll play that party mode by myself tonight. I don't know. Who knows? Maybe I'll fuck around with a solo
party.
Mario solo party. You know, the first two games of Mario Party. I played Mario Party 2 extensively as a young child. And then, I got every single year, I had a GameCube, I had all the Nintendo systems. So every single year, I would get the next Mario Party game because me and my brother loved playing Mario Party. And they definitely fell off pretty hard because just. Okay. How do I say this? It is like what has happened with Paper Mario, in which there are revisions to the formula that made it great that should not be replaced because then they are made bad.
The theory that you're saying here is that, like, Paper Mario comes out, that game's okay. That game is fine. First Paper Mario.
That game is extremely good.
Okay. But then you're saying after that, there were
Thousand
revisions.
Year Door comes out.
That game's great.
Extremely good.
That's a game even I know is great. I played that game. I didn't beat that game, but I played that game, even though it's not normally my thing, and I really enjoyed it. Thought the writing was great. Thought there was lots of cool stuff. Then what you're saying is, from there, what happens?
Sticker Star.
Better or worse?
What are we doing here?
I haven't played that game, Natalie.
I forget if that's the one I played.
Sticker Star is where you get a sticker book.
Uh-huh.
And you got to collect stickers to do attacks.
That Hold sounds on. Goofy.
Bad.
There was a
it's
good
weird.
One like 2 years ago that I played. Let me see.
Color Splash, which I think also has a different fighting mechanic, battle mechanic. I appreciate the original battle mechanic. Uh-huh. That is the one I stand for, and
you're saying that those one, the things that got better in Thousand Year Door, they should have stayed in place. That while
the things that got better in Thousand Year Door was a greater characterization of the side, the sort of like companions you get.
Sure.
You have a deeper story. The puzzles are better, or just like are like you know, a little bit longer, and it just, there's added a little bit more nuance to each of the existing variables of Paper Mario the first.
Right. Danielle, I think that you last reviewed Mario and Luigi Paper Jam.
And I think
your verdict here, yes. You say, outside of these occasional missteps, Paper Jam is a pure joy to play. Combat is fast, fun, and varied. The writing is witty and adorable, and the environments are fun to explore. Each new ability gave me an excuse to go through earlier areas again, scouring for goodies. This is a fantastic entry in a series known for quality, an action RPG that makes good on its action, and yet another excuse to spend more time in Mario's bright, bonkers world. Verdict, yes.
There it is.
That's at Ready Set Zam, yeah. Which has unfortunately been fucking pulled from the internet.
First.
So you have to go to archive.org to do a Wayback Machine search for it.
Yeah.
Interesting.
It's again, I don't have the strongest take on this because I only played Mario Parties 1, 2, and 7. But it felt to me, you can correct me, but it felt to me that the drop off in Mario Party quality was more extreme than the drop-off in both the Mario and Luigi and the Paper Mario series, which share some DNA. It all kind of started with the Mario RPG, and they both kind of split off from there. Mm. However, also, I played a Mario Party on the 3DS in early 2014 that was not awesome. So, I guess I played Mario Party 1, 2, 7, and whatever the fuck that one was.
Yeah, that one was like Superstar or something. It was like Mario Party.
Super something.
I never liked the idea of Mario Party on like a portable console on a 3DS or a DS. And I know that
Island
that's...
Tour.
Perhaps. Island Tour, I think, is the one.
Yeah, I agree.
That at Polygon, actually.
Because they're meant, and this is kind of one of the interesting things about the new Super Mario Party that just came out, is they don't offer online play for the actual party mode.
Huh. Do they offer it for the mini games?
I think the mini games you can play online, but you can't play the actual party mode online, which is interesting because I think it has something to do with multiple Switch systems and how they work in the party mode, but also I can see it being like trying to bring back, you know, the couch co-op sort of vibe and experience, and especially in the party mode, which is like supposed to be like playing a board game, like supposed to be like, you know, playing, sitting around a table playing a board game together. But a lot of people are disappointed that they can't, you know, play that online, which is understandable.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which I would like, but I understand.
We should figure out a chance to play, because I'm curious about the multi-screen, multi-switch stuff. So
yeah, I'm really interested to see like how that interacts with each other.
Yeah. It's weird because I feel like I'm fine with like Mario Kart being on a portable console where everyone's just looking at their own screen. But I think that's because Mario Kart is already a split screen game on a regular TV where you're always just focused on your own little corner. Whereas Mario Party, it's a shared screen. All of the games, or not all of them, but many of the games take place in a shared space. There are some split screen games, but many of them are just like the same shared space. Mm-hmm. It's important to kind of screen look sometimes. And just like being able to all look at the same one board on the page or on the monitor is like, feels right. I don't know.
Yeah. Because you're seeing like everyone's sort of, you know, when people like quick look the map and kind of you can follow where they're looking and you kind of strategize. And and that is the experience of sort of playing, you know, unless you are very good at board games and don't need to act out your intentions, unlike me.
Right.
But so I'm excited to play a little bit more of that and play the actual party mode and see what that is like.
We'll have to check it out.
Yeah.
Danielle, I know you have been doing some adventuring around the world, not the Mario world, but the world of ancient Greece.
Yes.
I tried
a different
to make that
cinematic
work.
Universe.
Tough. Yes.
I was in a different cinematic universe, unless Mario Odyssey may have gone to No, not really.
Well, it didn't somehow, despite having the name Odyssey.
Yeah,
wait
right.
For the DLC.
Yeah, it's wait for the Greek DLC. So, what do you think so far about Assassin's Creed Odyssey?
So I'm not very far in. I'm probably only a couple hours in.
You're still on Kefalonia, I'm guessing.
Yeah, I'm still on that first island.
Yeah.
I got through the 300 battle. started up as Cassandra.
Right.
I flew around with the bird. I'm doing some quests. There's some, I don't know, somebody owes somebody money. There's a vineyard.
Yeah, that's all.
Yep. It's very, so the last time I really put time into an Assassin's Creed was probably 2. And I played that way after it came out. I played that in like 2012 or something. And I really loved it. I liked playing that game quite a bit. And then I sort of like received tertiary fatigue around the series from just everyone else playing it and sort of getting bored with various iterations in the franchise and that kind of thing. Like, I own several Assassin's Creeds. I own Black Flag, which I actually do want to play one day. I own 3, which maybe I don't. I own several of these games.
That's getting remastered as part of this or re-released or something, 3? Isn't it? Yeah. Which is a weird thing, right?
They should pick Black Flag instead, from what I understand.
I think it's just about the timing on that. I think like Black Flag is new enough to have... I don't know.
Yeah.
All I know is Assassin's Creed 3 remaster is coming out as part of the Odyssey release.
Okay.
Like the season pass gets you a copy of a remastered version of Assassin's Creed 3, as well as Liberation, which is actually super interesting.
Okay.
Yeah, did you play Liberation?
No, I did not. I've sort of really weirdly followed along with the ups and downs of the series. I was very interested in Origins, but just didn't find time for it last year. And somehow I did not think I would find any time for Odyssey, but I find myself now, it was like, I didn't have plans on Friday. I deliberately canceled plans on Friday night, and I was like, no, I am going to sit at home. I'm going to play a video game. I'm going to relax. I'm going to make myself relax by hanging out with Cassandra in ancient Greece. And, you know, the game is fine. I'm more interested in Cassandra as a character. And that's something I plan to actually go in a little deeper on this week. I might write something, might do some more podcast stuff around it. So I don't want to go in too deep around that stuff. But she definitely is kind of the hook that's keeping me interested in playing right now. I think she's awesome. She's like this kind of like, kind of rad, like mercenary lady who, you know, she seems like she has a good time. She seems like she enjoys her life. I'm sort of interested to see where her journey goes, where her odyssey goes.
I got you. I see.
There it is.
I'm very curious to see what you think of it as you put more time in, because I'm now like 30 plus hours in and still like Cassandra and still have nothing but reservations about everything else in that game, basically. It's just not my thing. Like I'm happy people are having a good time with it, but it's just like every time I play, I hit something that's made me frustrated and made me feel like, oh, I could have put this time into anything else, you know?
Yeah, my friend Simone over at Polygon loves this series, like loves the sort of Syndicate on, I think, Assassin's Creed.
Syndicate's the one that I really want to play.
In a lot of, like...
Yeah, yeah, that's why it? I'm like, okay.
A lot of shared credits.
Yeah.
Interesting. I'm very much the like AC1 apologist, of course. And then I like Brotherhood a whole bunch. I don't love 2. I think 2's narrative pacing is just super weird. But I love Brotherhood. And then there were bits about 3 was really frustrating because there was so much about it that I thought I actually really enjoyed. I kind of enjoyed how self-serious it was. Because I don't think it necessarily stuck the landing, but it was fun to see them fucking go for it. And Black Flag was the one where I was the most like, wow, this is a good game, and I don't want to play it. Like, this is a good game. This is a good game. I don't want to play it. Yeah. I just don't want to keep doing the same stuff again and again. And in some ways, I feel like that is what maybe is happening with Odyssey, except that I don't necessarily feel like Odyssey doesn't strike me in the same way where I'm like, oh, this is a well-designed system, this is a cool idea, this is a neat character. I'm not having those same reactions for the most part. There are some standout characters. There's so much of Odyssey that there is a lot of opportunity for the occasional standout bit, right? Like, I had an entire quest line this past week. You get to like level 25 and you get through Athens. At the end of Athens, they're like, here are 3 things you can go do. And I did all 3 of those things, and one of those 3 things I thought was excellent. And the other 2 were like, pretty good. But then it's like, now I'm back in the deep end and I'm still only level like 26 or something, 27 maybe. And I still have so much to go still. And I'm back in this like downward trend of just like complete boilerplate side missions with characters I just don't give a fuck about, who are not, you know, that interesting, and where I'm not really getting the big plot stuff that I'm interested in, and the small side story stuff just isn't motivating me to keep playing. So I think I'm going to eject and just look at some YouTube videos once all that stuff is out there to see how that story wraps up, I guess.
Mm-hmm. In games like this, I feel like it would be so helpful to have like a guide who's like, here are the 10 best things you can do in this game. Here's how to have the best game experience out of this.
Well, the thing that's scary is...
And not in the YouTube way, but like in a... I don't know.
I get you.
Like actually had a friend sitting next to me who was like, oh, do this quest. Don't miss this. I have this knowledge. Yeah.
But they don't let you... Oh, sorry.
Yeah, no, you go ahead, Rob.
But they don't even let you stick to Critical Path quests because of the leveling system. Like, even if 100%. You always know the next thing you got to do, if you wanted to, you could go bada bing, bada boom, and just get this whole Odyssey done. But
hey, bada bing, bada boom, get this
New
Odyssey
York
done.
Odyssey.
Hey, New York hey. Odyssey over here.
Calypso, look, baby, it's been great, but I gotta go. My old lady's gonna be on my ass. Anyway, so you always know the next thing you've got to do.
I'm piloting a Chareem over here. Hey.
Hey, guy, just get over here. Tie me up. And just let me listen to this song. Just let me listen to the fucking siren. Go around the block. Let's go around the block a couple times. Around.
Keep driving.
This is a real summer jam right
this
here.
This is my favorite part right here.
This is my favorite part right here. They're screaming.
Listen.
That's it.
She's like, come to land and stay with us forever. Oh, man. You hear that? You don't hear it.
Take that
cotton out of your ears. Oh, shit. We just lost Maury.
Maury, what are you doing over there, Maury?
Oh, Maury, you should put the cotton back in. Oh, shit.
Put it back. Oh, Maury. Oh,
some guys that can't handle the sirens. Some guys.
You can't do it.
Not like me. Anyway, but so you always know, like, hey, here's the next thing I got to go do. But it's two levels away, and those levels start, like, you have to start grinding to get those levels. And so it's like, I need to go. Yeah, you can get through
the starting
island. Yes, you do. You can get through the starting island pretty quickly. But after that, it's like, look, you got to go help these... these little hapless motherfuckers all over Greece who's like, oh no, shit, I lost my pottery. God damn it. Bandits got there was a pot I was gonna dedicate to the gods. It was gonna be awesome. They were gonna love it. But these bandits, they came. You got 12 hours to get me this pot. We very cleverly concealed the seams and this like semi-procedural interaction we're having here. But you gotta do this like 15 times. Sound good to you? 15 times? You get me the thing.
Maybe you only need to do it, not to say 10 times, if you spend a couple bucks on the permanent XP boost.
No.
I keep seeing this online. I keep seeing people on Twitter say like, I'm so glad I bought the XP boost. This feels like it's the way the game is meant to be played. And
that's
it's
so
like,
fucked up.
It's so fucked up. I haven't dug into that stuff at all. Like, I never went into the XP. I didn't even know this was available until I started seeing people talk about it. And as soon as I saw it, I was like, well, fuck. There's kind of my first thought was like, I should just get that. Like, no, I shouldn't just get that. And then I thought, well, no, I probably shouldn't get it because I already am 30 hours into the game. I've already missed the window. Like, I would have already needed that 30 hours of permanent XP boost, unless it's retroactive, in which case, if it's retroactive, maybe I should just give them 20 bucks or whatever it is, and I should.
What are those, Odyssey bucks?
It's real dollars. It's real microtransaction dollars this thing.
Meanwhile,
it's,
I'm out there just, like, up to my ass in boars, just, like, clearing those things out like a fucking shitter in a ballpark or something. Just like, oh, no, we got boars in here. There's more boars.
It's so frustrating. So it's 10 bucks. It's or 1,000 Helix credits, which is the bucks, is what you get. You get those bucks. It gives you 50%. Right, genetic memory, of course. It gives you 50% extra experience points for the rest of the campaign. And
so it's not retroactive.
It doesn't seem like it. I don't see anything that says it would be. That would be great. No, it wouldn't. It'd be bad. There's actually a piece. There's a bunch of pieces about this everywhere. If you just search for like microtransactions, AC Odyssey, you'll find some stuff. But the thing that's so frustrating is I've been the person in the past who is like, who wants there to be. There have been times in my life where I'm like, man, I wish I could keep up with my friends who are playing X MMO. And if there wasn't, I would happily spend $10 for some sort of auto grind thing or auto leveler so I could keep up with my friends because they want to go do the new strike or they want to go do the new content. And I want to play with them for this week or like maybe I want to play with them all, you know, 3 times a week, but they're playing 5 or 6 times a week. I can't keep up with that. So I wish I could just spend an extra $10. I'd be happy to do that. And so I want there to, I'm the person who's given that argument before. And for those cases, I'm cool with there being XP doublers and shit like that, especially if a game is free or cheap or something like that, right? You know, something like a Guild Wars 2 where you've paid already to get the game and then you just, there's no subscription or something like that, right? But this is the opposite case. This is the nightmare case that people argue back to me for years, which is like, well, what happens when people start developing games and putting in the – tweaking the numbers such that the XP purchase, the XP bonus is the thing – is the way the game is meant to be played, is the thing that you should also buy to have the more desirable experience. And it's so frustrating to see it come to bear. And it the thing that's the most frustrating is – is there a version of this game where they tweak those XP values such, and maybe I have this? Or is there a version of this game where they gave me this as part of the reviewer package, and I had it on and didn't even notice the difference? Do you know what I mean? Like, I think we just got the regular code. There was a whole thing where it was like, oh,
give us the special code. But they didn't
They were going to give us the special code. They didn't have it yet on the Xbox. They had it on the PS4. I was like, no, I want to play on Xbox.
I think I got the special code.
So I'm super curious because if you get this XP doubler, if I had gotten that XP doubler, I guarantee my experience of this game would be so different because I would be bailing on these side quests 50% sooner, right, to go move forward. And I hadn't even considered what this did to the reviews. This is like fucking Usual Suspects right
That's
now.
That's fucked up. Yeah, this is...
Yeah, I'm out here talking about Pepe Silva right now. You know, Usual Suspects.
Exactly. All right, we got Usual Suspects. We got the New York Odyssey.
New York Odyssey.
What else we got Pepe today?
Silva. No such thing. So yeah, so like that's one of those things where it's like, I bet I would have had a better time of this game because I would have been moving from main plot point to main plot point instead of lingering and just trying to clean up every fucking snake pit in Athens, you know?
But that's not going to be most people's experience of the game.
Unless they're spending $20 or $10 to get this XP
bonus.
That's
so ridiculous!
Yeah. Yep.
Oh, it makes me mad!
It's bad. Anyway, ugh, God. There are also temporary 2-hour XP bonuses that you can get with just your Yubi points, I think, instead of your Helix credits.
Alexio seems like somebody who
do
it.
How do you make Yubi points?
From just playing the game. What did you say,
Alexio
wrong?
Seems like somebody who do a little bump before going to do some quests.
Oh, just trying to get his head right, you know, just trying to get what he needs.
He's got to get focused.
Get in the zone.
That's right. Anything else this week that we've been playing? Really briefly, during my tooth pain, I had this sort of like, if all I was doing was resting, it was the worst because all I could focus on was the pain. I couldn't even really watch anything. I needed to like really focus on something. So I started Dragon Quest XI, which is like just low intensity enough to keep my attention on something, and I am still super early in that game, but so far it is fairly charming, so I'll report in on that if I continue.
Nice. I finished Life is Strange 2 episode
one. Nice. What'd you think?
I know we talked about it last week, so I won't belabor
I'm still curious what you think.
I really loved it. Honestly really loved it, and I was a tiny bit skeptical going in because you know how hard I enjoyed how queer the first two games were, very much about like young women's stories, young women in love, and that was awesome, and I really loved that. And this is entirely different. But even though it was about like two young men, like a 16-year-old boy and his like 10-year-old brother, I thought it was really beautiful. And like there were parts I definitely almost teared up. I thought the writing was fantastic. I actually really enjoyed the design of it. The puzzles are much more, you know. They're a little bit more straightforward now. Like playing the game feels very, very, very smooth. Whereas, you know, there were a couple of points in the first game where it felt a little sticky, a little bit like, oh, okay, this is a little tweaky. Like it didn't, you know, keep me from enjoying the game, obviously. But this does feel like an overall much smoother experience, and really, really, really loved it. I think it's incredibly affecting, and the writing was quite good. So
awesome. I'm still excited to get to it. It's one of those things that I'm like, I mean, is the whole thing releasing? What is the schedule for release for it this year?
I actually not sure when episode 2 is out. This one is, I know Patrick mentioned it, but this one is much sort of meatier than I think any other episode. Yeah. It was like four and a half hours for me, actually.
Oh, wow. That's meeting. That's substantial.
I also do everything.
A good session.
That's a good session.
It was a good session.
I would want to play through the whole thing in one thing. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I usually prefer shorter games. This one, I genuinely thought sort of, made good on it, so.
You know what this reminds me of?
I'm not seeing it here.
Yeah, I don't see any sort of, like, release schedule that I can find. It's 5 episodes. My guess is it'll be running through early next year at this point, right? Or mid-next year, maybe. I may just wait. We'll see. We'll see. If I find the time for it, I would love to play it before the end of the year. But it did just remind me that we're still supposed to get Kentucky Route Zero Act 5 this year. And
oh, boy.
I'm so... Or Act 4? Act 5. Act 5. Act 4 came out in 2017. I didn't get around to Act 4. I lost my KRZ save. I played through Act 3, and then my computer died, and I lost that save, and I never backed it up. So I have to replay the whole... I have to. Oh, no. Replay the whole first three parts of the game, or four parts of the game now, which I'm excited about, but I hope that hits this year. I very, very, very much would love to have... a new Kentucky Route Zero thing in my life in 2018. It's a series that I think a lot of people have not dug into, partially because they've been waiting for it to all be done, but also I think it gets an immediate reputation as being like, oh, it's magical realist, it's like an adventure game with some like weird shit in it, and all that's true, but it is also very much, as the series continues, clearly about all the stuff that we love talking about, about kind of the American ideal and the American dream and capitalism and, you know, the ways in which identity are created. It's a fantastic series. So here's hoping that we get the final act of KRZ this year.
Hey, question for y'all, and if this is nothing, like, feel free to cut it, Kato, but I was racking my brain this week and I was feeling a little spooky. I was like, I feel like something spooky, but not like Alien Isolation spooky. Like, that's it's a little beyond what I'm aiming for. But there was a game I vaguely remember. It was like kids like attending a party, but like things are getting creepy, and it had a sorcery-esque aesthetic. And I cannot. Was it
not Oxenfree?
But are you thinking Oxenfree? It looks like Oxenfree for sure.
Were they on an island?
Yes.
It's Oxenfree.
Okay.
You should play Oxenfree.
Is it spooky?
It's spooky, but it's not super spooky. It's a cool game. I'm super frustrated by that game because I think it has really cool lore, but getting that lore requires a lot of backtracking, and it was kind of the thing I was most interested in by the end of it, more than like the character relationships or stuff. But it has a really great style, some great, great sound work, some great visual art. It's worth checking out.
I watched a Let's Play of that, but I found that cool.
So. Austin.
Yeah.
Game Pass.
Oh, we should hit Game Pass, and then we should probably wrap up. Hey, Game Pass is kind of great.
That's how I'm playing Forza Horizon 4. Like, I was like, man, I wish I'd just play that, but I can't. And then Game Pass was like, could I interest you? Could I tempt you in some Forza Horizon 4?
So
and I was like, the whole game? Because, like, don't do this to me. Like, because when Sony was like, do you want some Drive Club? They were lying. They weren't giving me Drive Club. They were giving me like a little nibble
give you a
of
taste.
Drive Club.
Yeah.
Sampler.
Yeah. But this was like, this is the whole thing. And it's just like.
It's the whole thing. It's the
whole
thing.
Go to that festival.
Just go. Just bring me to the festival. The thing that's unbelievable about it to me is like, so what is it? It's $10, right? $10 a month. So it's not nothing. It ain't nothing. Is that also right? That's right. Right.
Yeah.
Game Pass. $10 a month. I'm gonna have to pull up a list of like what all is on there, but like in my mind it's always just whatever Microsoft has released this year, right? So it's a subscription based service. Microsoft, I think, has described it as like the Netflix for video games, right? That's their goal with it. But in my mind it was like, oh right, that's the thing that has like Forza Horizon 4, which is rad, State of Decay 2, what's the boat one? What's the Sea of Thieves? I'm like, okay, cool. Like, those are all cool game Recore. Okay. But then, like, when you look at the list of every game that's on this platform now, it's, you know, Elder Scrolls Online. It's Hitman from 2016. It's Rocket League. It's Doom from 2016. It's all of the Gears of War games. It's Tom Clancy's The Division. It is Halo 5. It is Cluster Truck. It is that previous Cluster Tomb Raider Truck. Game. It is City Skylines. It is Warhammer Vermintide 2. It's Graveyard Keeper. It's Quantum Break. It's Abzu. It's Rage, the original Rage. It's Ruiner. It's a bunch of Fable games. It's like all of the Fable games? Damn, it's all the Fable games. I never beat Fable 2. I should go back and beat Fable 2. Garou Mark of the Wolves, a great SNK fighting game. It's Wasteland 2, which I didn't even realize was out on Xbox One. It is, I'm just like clicking through this list at this point. Like Sherlock Holmes, The Devil's Daughter.
Not it's their Fallout best work, 4. But it's fine.
Sure, but it's on there, right? I mean, there's lots of stuff here that I would not advise playing, like Homefront the Revolution. Homefront the Resolution. Homefront the Revolution, I would not necessarily recommend here. But there's a lot here that's really fucking cool that is, I so wish that I, like, Laser League is a game that came out this year that I don't think anybody played, not enough people played it. Really fucking cool game. If I was, like, 19 and in college, I would so much rather spend $10 a month for this than do the thing I was doing at the time, which was trading in everything I owned, literally sometimes going to a pawn shop to sell stuff to get money for games. That is literally where I was at. And this would just be like so easily fit into that niche. Obviously at the time, the thing is like, it would not necessarily only be giving me new, games on that generation. It would be giving me past games. And it's something that I wish, like, I really want to see PlayStation Now develop in this direction, because like PS2 has an incredible backlog that is just fantastic, and having access to that would be incredible, you know? I don't know. It's just it's a thing that I think struck both of us this weekend as being incredible.
Yeah, it was like it was like finding a couple $20 bills in a pair of jeans you washed. Like, that's how it felt. Right. I was like, cool. Nice. Like, this is neat. And if I...
At least two.
Like, one is like, huh, I guess I forgot about that. Two is like, shit, that's a pretty good deck.
That's what I'm saying. It's like, I picked a random... give me a number from 1 to 11.
7.
All right, 7. I'm clicking on the 7th page of games on the Xbox Game Pass. MotoGP 17, that's a motorcycle game. I probably wouldn't play that, but maybe it's good. Monday Night Combat was a pretty cool game at the time. Payday 2, a pretty decent game. Ms. Splosion Man, a pretty decent game. Dirt 4, a good game, if I remember
Very
right.
Very good game.
MX versus ATV Reflex, again, not my thing, but it's on here. Tom Clancy's The Division, a game I have mixed feelings about. N Plus, one of my favorite games. Zombie Army Trilogy. I have no idea what this is, but it seems to be about killing Nazi zombies.
Do you not know about
zombies.
Zombie Army Trilogy?
I don't know about Zombie Army Trilogy.
There are other games in which you can kill Nazi zombies?
Oh. Yeah.
Oh, my friends.
Yeah. Well, it's the dying Natalie's flames impressed. Of World War II. Hitler has unleashed one final unholy gamble, a legion of undead super soldiers that threatens to overwhelm the whole of Lorup.
We're in the European Wars. Valkyriac. Yeah.
Valkyria Chronicles, fake Europe. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's not nowhere near as like polished or like built out as like Call of Duty Zombies is, but this is like.
Thank you.
This is. Do you like just zeroing in on Nazis with a sniper rifle from like far, far away and just like blowing fuck out of them?
Give it to me.
But they're zombies, so like for the most part they can barely shoot back, and you'll get slow-mo kill Love cams it. And like see like the hydrostatic shock the bullets are inflicting on their zombified flesh. It's
sure.
And here's the weird thing. It's weirdly meditative because like the name of this game is like
totally.
You have to stay cool. Like the zombies are slow shamblers for the most part, but like you have to make your shots land. So you just have to post up and not miss. Do not panic. Do not rush your shots, no matter how scary those zombies get. Just keep taking them down. And you get into this like sort of zen state. It's a bit like a racing game where it's just like, you're racking in a new round. Count for bullet drop. Squeeze. Yeah, there you go.
Nazi zombies is my meditation. 100%.
Sounds great.
That is my meditative. My meditative.
I'm practice. No doctor.
Other, but.
But I felt the Nazi zombie trilogy was a very good therapy paradigm, therapeutic paradigm.
I'm actually going to check this. Why don't I I need an Xbox so I can play this. Well, that's the
thing, right? It's very funny. For weeks I've been like, why do you want an Xbox so bad? Now here I am being like, Ninja Gaiden Black, Battle Block Theater, Oblivion. Oblivion, one of it's a fantastic game. Battle Block Theater is pretty, I didn't have You know what? I didn't have anyone to play it with when it came out, so I just get to watch other people play it, but it seemed good. Bomber Crew, a game from this year that I streamed way earlier
all
this year.
The
I
Halos. Thought
it was really fucking cool. All of the Halos. Oxenfree is still, this is still on page, just page 7. Oxenfree, Guacamelee, Super Turbo Championship Edition.
Wait, Oxenfree's perfect. On there?
Oxenfree's on there. You have Oxenfree already. You can go play that shit right now. This is what I'm saying. Perfect Dark Zero, not a great game. Bad game. But
is the remastered on there?
Not on this page. Maybe on a different page.
That game is good. The original Perfect Dark is good.
Oh, the original Perfect Dark is good. So yes.
Because they remastered it for the Rare Replay and
Bet it. I mean, I could search game title, which I'll do in a second. Night Squad, okay. Which I have no idea what Night Squad is. Portal Knights, and Massive Chalice, and also a Resident, like cool a bunch hit. Of Resident Evil games. I like Massive Chalice a lot more than.
Damn! Like, why are you making me want an Xbox so bad?
I don't know, but I'm just saying. Like, we do not normally go into the lane of like consumer advocacy or like this is the best bet for consumers. But if we're already going to be hating on microtransactions this episode, we may as well also shout out a thing we think is pretty decent, which is the Xbox Game Pass, which I think is like a hell of a deal. And it's a number of it's one of those things where it's like, I love it when a company is trying shit because they need to stay relevant. I think that the rent to own Xbox thing from the Microsoft Store is a pretty decent deal. I was so ready to just like come hammer down on that thing for it being exploitative, like most rent to own things are. You know, most rent-a-center style services tend to take advantage of people who don't have enough income to make a purchase all at once, and instead of charging them, let's say a few $100, they end up charging them like $1,000 for something over the course of 2 years
with interest. Yeah,
exactly. But the rent to own Xbox One deals from the Microsoft Store are actually like totally a good deal in a way that I was shocked by. They just really want people to be in that ecosystem, I think. So it is, and I think that the Game Pass is just like, it's one of those deals that like, I haven't heard a lot of people talk about. I think because people in our situations so often are just like getting code, or when they buy a game, we're not buying every new thing that comes out. We're buying like the things that actually speak to us. And so it's not as big of a deal because we have so many other things that we just get code for. There's like, I could stop being a games journalist tomorrow and I think I'd sign up for Xbox Game Pass because it just seems like a cool way to stay in the loop. You know, it's not all of the newest releases, but it is like, wow, like there's some new cool shit in here, you know? Yeah. Which, you know, good for them. It's one of those things that's just like, Dendara is on here. That's the thing that I like about it, is that Forza Horizon 4 is on here, but so is Dendara, a game that I think Danielle, you and I both thought was pretty cool this year, or awesome. Graveyard Keeper, two, you know, indie games that I think any way to put those games in front of somebody is a service I'm happy to shout out. So,
yeah.
All right, that's my rant about a good game service to spend money on, the least Austin Walker thing I can think of. I have one good, important question here before we go, and this one comes in to the gamingadvice.com email. So if you have questions, you can send them there, gamingadvice.com. And this one comes in from Adam, who says, if Kirby ate you, what power would they get by...
Ooh. Damn.
It's a hard one. I know. We got to think about it.
Kirby would become an MMA EMT.
Okay.
Is that
would be like you
should fight and he could and heal. The fighter.
Right. You'd fight. It'd be like melee attacks, but then also you could like heal your co-op partner.
Yes.
Yeah.
That'd be good. That'd be good. Rob.
Eloquence.
Would you like to elaborate on that?
No, Kirby took that power from me.
Oh, I see.
You'll have to ask Kirby.
Natalie.
My Kirby power would be... Oh, God. Do you have one ready to go, Austin?
I don't know.
Kirby masticates now. That's how he describes what he does now.
Mm-hmm. He doesn't eat.
My superpower would probably be something about sleep. Sleeping a lot would probably be to be able to sleep a lot.
Sick.
Or my actual superpower would be talking people into circles that have no end. So gotcha. I would just be able to hold people hostage with speech.
So also eloquence. Also eloquence like Rob.
But less eloquent because I'm not very succinct.
Gotcha. I think mine's easy. It would just be Kirby would get glasses, right? And then the like buttons would call in allies. I'd just be like, all the cool people I'm surrounded by, all the other cool Kirby's would come out. One of the like, it'd be random. You wouldn't get to pick. It'd be kind of a shitty power to have. Where it's like, I hit the attack button. Like, well, who comes out? Is it going to be the eloquence Kirby or is it going to be the MMA EMT Kirby? Who could say? But it's like an ally based. All my good friends coming to save the day, Kirby.
Like an upbeat Far Cry 2.
Yeah, exactly. Finally.
Kirby's Far Cry 2.
Finally, the upbeat Far Cry 2 we've always wanted. If you have questions, you can send them to gaming@vice.com. As always, I want to shout out Bowen for letting us use the track Miss You, the EP Pale Machine. Find out more about that at waypoint.zone/BOEN. As always, you can follow us at twitter.com/waypoint, facebook.com/waypointvice. waypoint.vice.com. We will have another episode this week of what? We'll have the Waypoint 101 for Red Dead going up. We recorded that last week. May have the next Purge episode going up. I'm not 100% sure if it'll be this week or next week. The
Red Dead, we might actually not be.
Do you want to rotate?
We'll see. Take some pressure off us.
We're also... Yeah, we also need to figure out art for that podcast still. So that'll either be this week or next week. In any case, you should still watch The Purge. What's the second Purge card called? What's it actually called?
Anarchy.
The Purge Anarchy. I'm super excited to watch that. I'm going to watch it tonight. Yeah. What else is going on this week, people? Anything else important? Do we know waypoints?
Yeah, waypoints.
What waypoints should people be looking forward to for Wednesday's episode?
That's a good question.
Take your pick of Alan First novels, whatever one catches your fancy. But those are some.
Is there one that you think you can point people to as something to get a taste, maybe?
So his best work is his first, Night Soldiers. That remains, like, I think probably his strongest novel. Probably the one where, like, he is not fully embraced, like, genre fiction. But there's... genre fiction can be a good entry point. In which case, I would say, Spies of Warsaw is a... decent sampler of what you're getting into there, or the one I just read, Dark Voyage.
Awesome.
Mine is going to be, I think, I went to the New York Film Festival last night, and there was a surprise showing of mid-90s, the Jonah Hill's first directorial debut, which I... predominantly really liked for the most part, and you can't watch it yet, but I will.
There were trailers for it.
There are trailers for it.
Yeah.
Which I'll also we'll share in the show notes.
It struck me so much when I saw the trailers. I'm probably not gonna be on this Waypoints episode. I'll be traveling this week. Or we'll see. I might be able to pull it out. But I watched that trailer and I definitely thought it looked like a sort of PG-13 kids. I don't know if you've seen kids, but
it's not PG. It's really intense.
Is it? But is it? Do you know kids? The movie Kids.
I know about it.
Okay. Well, if it's that intense, they were not selling it as that intense in those trailers. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
it's not that intense.
Okay.
It is. It is kind of. I would say it's like in between PG-13 and R, but maybe a little bit more R, but it's not as explicit
as Harmony Korine's Kids. Yeah,
yeah.
The movie is a lot.
It's a fucking lot. I'm not. Lot. Yeah, I have not seen it in probably in years. So I'm not here to necessarily co-sign it.
I watched A Quiet Place for the first time this weekend. So
awesome.
So, that will be my waypoint either this week or maybe sometime in the future, depending on how everything shakes
our
out.
Scheduling but, stuff, yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, we'll look forward to that stuff. As always, by the end of today, I would love to be able to tweet out a thing saying what all of our waypoints will be this week. So look forward to that. As always, you can find me on Twitter at Austin_Walker. Where can people find you, Natalie?
At Natalie Watson.
Rob Zachney.
At Rob Zachney.
Danielle Riendo.
At Danielle R.I.
As always, you can follow Cotto, our great producer, at @A_Cotto_appears on Twitter. That is going to do it for us. Danielle, you want to take us out of here?
Be good. Be good at it.
Peace.
Horizon.
It calls to you.
Peace, Horizon.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.